Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Big play here. Trying to go up top for it.
He wants to run for it, Jim. He wants to just go get it with his legs. He's trying to find
it
the
opening.
It wasn't
there, so now he's got to throw it deep to the end zone. And was that caught? Yes! Ty Johnson scrapes it off the ground. Fakes left, now taking off, gonna run for it, he got it, and there he goes, inside the 10, the 5, oh, the play of the year in the NFL.
Well, they got after us earlier this year, so we got a lot of film to watch. It's a great team, it's a great quarterback, obviously, with Lamar, what he's able to do. He's one of the most dynamic, if not the most dynamic quarterback in the league. He's so fun to watch, but I'll be watching their defense this week, so that's our focus.
So you heard some highlights from the Bills 31-7 win over the Broncos this weekend. Jim Nance on the call, and then you heard Josh Allen after the game talking about the matchup coming up this Sunday at 6:30. He'll be paying attention to the Ravens defense, but he knows who Lamar Jackson is. So let's get to the Josh Allen of it all. And if somehow Lamar Jackson does not win the MVP, it will be Josh Allen. Josh Allen has had himself a hell of a year, and he can, like Lamar Jackson, Jason, beat you in multiple ways.
Yeah, I mean, look, this, I feel like short shrift isn't the right way to put it. That was the first thing that popped in my mind. I feel like in our vigor to defend Lamar Jackson as the singular best MVP candidate in the NFL, which I strongly believe he was, at times it may have come off as maybe not giving Josh Allen his due, or maybe as the pendulum swung so far in the narrative world out there, you know, in the bloviating sphere of Josh Allen, Josh Allen, Josh Allen, you know, we push back on that, and I think rightfully so. But none of that should diminish what he's done, what he can do, and the kind of one-man army that when he's at his best, he can be. And he's the only player who averages over 250 passing yards and over 50 rushing yards per game in the playoffs in his career. Okay, so nobody else can claim that mantle. 27 total touchdowns in his first 10 career playoff games. That was second most all-time in anybody's first 10 playoff games. We're looking at somebody who helped the Bills become the first team in NFL history to have 30 passing touchdowns or more and 30 rushing touchdowns or more. And he is a drive finisher in the way, frankly, that Derrick Henry is a drive finisher for the Baltimore Ravens. He is that same sort of physical approach inside the goal-to-go situations, inside the 10, that Derrick Henry is. A little different body type, but similar results. I mean, look, Josh Allen in his career in the postseason has a 102.3 passer rating. That's no joke. The issue for him most of his career was turnovers. In the playoffs, he's only thrown 4 interceptions total in 11 career playoff games. So even early in his career, he was pretty good about not turning the ball over in the postseason. He was a little wild and woolly fumbling early in his career, especially in the playoffs, but he's tamped that down. This team has not lost at home this year. I think the Buffalo Bills are 15-5 all time in the playoffs at home. Now, they have been knocked out of the playoffs at home in consecutive years, and maybe it will be a third year. But, I mean, Josh Allen is coming into this game with some of the baggage as Lamar Jackson, but I don't think it's quite the same. I mean, you know, this guy did have a 3-touchdown passing game against the Steelers, you know, a year ago. He's had a 5-touchdown passing game in the playoffs before. He's had a 4-passing touchdown game in the playoffs before. That one was at Arrowhead and one of the greatest games ever played. And he dropped back 50 times in that game. Sorry, 40 times in that game. Did not throw an interception. So no one should be thinking that this is anything other than one of the most unique challenges that you're going to get. And the playoffs, by and large, have brought out the best in Josh Allen. The team hasn't advanced as far as you'd like. But that's often been because the defense hasn't been able to get stops when they've needed them. It hasn't been, by and large, because Josh Allen couldn't generate offense. Now, last year against Kansas City, that was a problem. But then Kansas City came here a week later, and Baltimore's offense did even less.
Yeah.
So I think Josh Allen will have everybody's attention all week long in those defensive meeting rooms. And he does have the ability to take this game over. He has the ability, like a Lamar Jackson, to run for 100 yards and throw for 300 yards, even against really good defenses.
Yeah, it was never a case of saying, oh, Josh Allen, he's not having a good year. Why is this even a conversation? It's just that Lamar has been just so out of this world where he is more deserving of the MVP. But what Josh Allen has had to do this season, and doing more with less, does he have a great offensive line? Absolutely. But the weapons, and we know that their defense, and in particular their safety position, got decimated by free agency. And a lot of people, remember, entering the year, this could be a team that maybe takes a step back this season, and all they do is win 13 games, and Josh Allen has his most productive season of his career, and he deserves to be commended for that. But what is interesting gearing up for this matchup, Josh Allen has never played the Ravens well. He has never played the Ravens well.
Now, even in the playoff game they won.
You look at the regular season games. He's completed under 50% of his passes. Under 50, not 60, 50% of his passes, 66.3 passer rating. And that playoff game was his best statistical game against the Ravens, where he went 23 of 37, 206 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions there. So Ravens have kind of had this secret sauce. Now, it's still only 2-2 in the 4 games against him, but they've played him well defensively.
Well, the interesting thing to me here is going to be as well, Patrick Queen had a certain skill set that attracted these guys to him in the first round. And I think part of that was, hey, if it's a day where, and at that point you go back 3-4 years ago, Mahomes was running a little more than he is now. And even right now, Mahomes can go and tear off 25 yards on you, like seemingly whenever he wants. So, all right, so we've got this new era of quarterbacks coming in. We've got Josh Allen. We've got Mahomes. You know, Baker Mayfield, who ran quite a bit early on in his career, had been a 1-1 in the same draft class as Lamar, right? You're seeing the bleeding in of those guys into the league. And Josh Allen's somebody who, I'm sorry, Patrick Queen is somebody you think you want to have that skill set to spy that kind of quarterback if need be. And then Trenton Simpson, obviously not the same sort of draft capital, but still.
Speed.
Day 2 pick and, you know, somebody you think is going to play a lot of football for you. And they thought he had a lot of the same attributes as Patrick Queen and that he could step in and fill that role. I don't know about a Malik Harrison spying a Josh Allen. I don't know about Chris Board spying a Josh Allen. And you don't have Kyle Hamilton around the line of scrimmage as much as you used to. And Marlon's been really good at that, but I mean, Marlon and Kyle are not a one-for-one. It's not an entire like-for-like. And this team, although they haven't been throwing to Cook that much lately, this time a year ago they were throwing to him a ton. They can throw to him more. Ty Johnson, same way. He might not catch a ball for 3 weeks. Then he'll catch 5 for 114 against the Lions. Like, that's in there. He'll have a game where he doesn't do anything for 2 weeks. Then he'll catch, you know, 4 for 60. Like, so all of that together, those different body types in the backfield together, in the pistol, I will be really interested to see how Zach Orr and Dean Pease approach this, because they don't have I mean, unless Trent Simpson plays more than we think because of this, and I suspect he does not, I'll be interested to see how they defend that, because I think we know what the thinking was when these teams met in the first half of the season. We certainly know what the thinking would have been had they met a year ago, like we thought they might. You know, that would have been Patrick Queen or Trenton Simpson.
We have a huge Tuesday show as we really start getting you ready in earnest for Ravens and Bills. That game is Sunday at 6:30, which means Baltimore Game Day Uncensored pregame show. We'll start at 3 o'clock here on The Fan. Guest-wise, Rita Hubbard, her weekly chat with us on Tuesdays at 3:30. We'll talk Terps with the legendary voice of Maryland basketball, Johnny Holiday, joining us at 4. And NFL playoff talk, Ravens and elsewhere, with our friend Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network at 4:30.
Yeah, kind of an off-kilter performance for the Terps last night, I felt like. I mean, it's good that you can beat lesser teams without playing your best. And it probably felt like a natural letdown spot for them, given how UCLA was a big game, bigger program, your first game back after an unsuccessful West Coast trip. And now you've got some of these road games lingering. So I think there was a bit of a trap element to it. But that first half at home did not look like any of the other first halves at home.
Nah, that was some ugly basketball. But coming up next, Ravens and Bills, as we pointed out, they played each other early this season. Ravens won 35-10. We look back. Anything we can glean from that game as we look ahead to Sunday, we'll discuss next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next here on The Fan.
Out of the pistol, Derrick Henry has the bat. Here goes Henry up a big running game. From the 9, no, fake it. Lamar Jackson's going to take it to the end zone. Baltimore touchdown.
And we were running the ball. I thought very creatively, but also the boots. Some of the quick play action passes were good for us. Lamar again has just been fantastic.
Highlights courtesy of NBC. That was back. Wow, the Ravens went to 2-2 with that win. Derrick Henry went for, 89 yards on the first play from scrimmage. Ravens were up 21-3 at the half, coasted to a 35-10 win over the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen only 16-29 for 180 yards passing, ran for 21 more, got beat up in that football game. Anything at all you glean from that one? I know some people on the Buffalo side are saying, well, Milano didn't play, a couple other, I think, defensive backs didn't play in that game. I don't know if that affects the run game.
Yeah, I don't know that it affects the run game all that much either. And I don't think Milano's going to hold up against these guys. If you think he's going to bring a whole lot to the party, stopping a 6 offensive line, fullback, 2 or 3 tight end attack, we're not watching the same player.
It goes both ways. That was Rosengarten's first start of the season. That was McCary's first start of the season at guard. Marcus Williams was still starting at free safety. Michael Pierce didn't play in that football game. Lindebaum was still banged up from early in training. That cuts both ways.
Yeah, there are a few things that stood out for me in going back and rehashing this game. One was, we know they ran it down their throats, but, and I alluded to some of this yesterday, the scope of the passing game was so limited because, frankly, the scope of the run game was limitless, that they only had to attempt 4 passes to Bateman, Andrews, and Zay Flowers. That's not 4 each. That's 4 total attempts to those 3. The running backs dominated in the passing game. Justice Hill and Derrick Henry combined for 9 catches on 9 targets for 88 yards and 2 touchdowns. Okay, like, those two combined for 3 scrimmage touchdowns and 305 scrimmage yards. That's not Lamar Jackson, too. That is Justice Hill and Derrick Henry combining for 305 scrimmage yards and 3 touchdowns. I also found it was interesting going back and rewatching Derrick Henry's runs. This was still a period of time where they were figuring things out and they were just starting to lean into the under center stuff. He had 16 runs under center and just 8 out of the gun. The 16 under center was kind of like how it was very early in the season. 16 for 67, no touchdowns, 4.2 per carry. Those 8 runs out of the gun went for 132 yards and a touchdown. When they ran Derrick Henry out of the gun with Pat Ricard on the field, 5 rushes, 116 yards, and a touchdown. Stands the reason we'll see more of that. They're now, obviously, I don't think we're going to see a 2-to-1 ratio from center to gun rushes out of Henry this time around. It's going to be way more out of the gun because that's what they're doing the most of now. That's the main thing in the run game, and they're dominating. It was also a day where Lamar didn't run much because he didn't have to. But if you look at each individual run, pretty successful, right? 5 for 54. He had 1 for 6, 1 for 3, 1 for 11, 1 for 6, where he fumbled, could have been better. 9-yard touchdown and 19 yards. So of those 6 rushes, 5 were for 6 yards or more. I think there's more meat on that bone if they want to get there. Ravens rushing attack against the Bills in that game with Pat Ricard on the field, regardless of ball carrier. 23 rushes, 201 yards, a touchdown, 8.7 yards per carry. I don't see where the Bills have gotten better against that stuff, because for the season, the Buffalo Bills allowed 5.9 yards per carry with a fullback on the field. That's 31st in the NFL.
Going back and looking at my notes and NFL Next Gen stats of that game, it was really fascinating to see, and you documented in real time just how this run game has evolved. Because remember early on in this year, that pitch left.
Yeah, that was all they had.
Killing teams. It was killing teams. Derrick Henry on runs outside the tackles against the Bills averaged 13.3 yards per carry. 13 carries, 173 yards. But we know how good Derrick Henry's been in between the tackles down the stretch. Not so much in this game. 11 carries for 26 yards in between the tackles. He had 119 rushing yards over expected in that game. But then, guys, you look at the Ravens' defensive performance. Outstanding.
Yeah.
12 first downs allowed. The 12 first downs by the Bills were the fewest in a game in their last 5 years.
And they beat the crap out of Allen in that game.
Which spanned 79 games, playoffs included. The Bills' longest run all night was 8 yards. Josh Allen had his second lowest dropback success rate in a game in his career. 8 of 34 dropbacks resulting in a successful play. They were just dominant on both sides of the football. And remember, the only touchdown that the Bills scored was that broken play to Shakir where he's running to the sideline. That was it.
Jason, also, and I don't think I'm reinventing the wheel here, but the Bills can't stop the run. The Ravens are great at running the ball. And if you run the ball, you're keeping the ball out of Josh Allen's hands.
You're making him chase the clock, and you're speeding him up a little bit, and you're putting him in uncomfortable situations.
And Jason, the other thing, there was only one play with an extra offensive lineman in that first game against the Bills where we just saw Josh Jones 15 plays.
And 2 weeks before that against Houston, 13 times. And yes, they used the jumbo package, or we'll call it super jumbo package, 12 times in the first 15 games. They have now used it 29 times in the last three. That is a seismic shift, and that will be something that the Bills are going to have to, again, I don't know,
Matt Milano,
even to get into their base defense and to bring more beef onto the field. They're not really built that way. There's a reason that they're in nickel and dime all the time, because that's their best personnel. That's how they think. 9 times out of 10, they're best positioned to succeed. They don't see teams there aren't many teams who do it this way. Nobody was getting under center as much as the Ravens were for a 5 or 6 week stretch. Now nobody's running the ball out of the shotgun better than they are. And they've added this third wrinkle of the 6 offensive linemen that really was just, they did it once in a short yardage situation against Buffalo in that game. And that was it. And even on the other side of the ball, like, Marcus Williams played 92% of the snaps in this game. Trenton Simpson played 63% of the snaps in this game. Like, Brent Urban got a big run. Not to say he won't again.
Pierce was out.
Pierce didn't play. Eddie Jackson played a third of the snaps. Ardarius Washington played 6 fewer snaps than Eddie Jackson. I'm sorry, 2 fewer snaps than Eddie Jackson in that game. Like, that was a 14-snap game for Adisa Isaac. Only 8 snaps for Harrison. Now, again, maybe they do something a little different. Maybe we do see a little more Trent Simpson than we have.
For speed,
because of this whole Josh Allen thing, maybe in certain downs and distances, they lean into him and say, look, your responsibility is just to contain that quarterback. It's eyes on him and just play the quarterback. But, yes, there's been an evolution for both of these teams, I'd say for the Ravens, schematically and personnel-wise. For the Bills, certainly personnel-wise on defense.
Ravens and Bills, it's Sunday at 6:30. We'll get back to the Ravens in just a few minutes, but actually, we'll continue with the Ravens. My apologies. John Harbaugh had his Monday press conference yesterday. What did he have to say? Well, you're going to hear from him next here on The Fan.
Yeah, that's in we'll see mode. He's working hard to get back, and we'll see toward the end of the week if he's practicing. And he could play without practicing for sure if he feels healthy enough and if it's safe for him.
That's John Harbaugh yesterday. Obviously, the question on a lot of Ravens fans' minds, Zay Flowers' injury status. And I guess we'll start to get an idea of this tomorrow when they take the field. But as Harbs threw in there at the end, he could not practice all week and play on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't think anybody paying real close attention here is holding their breath or banking on or counting on Zay Flowers to be a part of this operation. There's certain ways that they signal things that you can kind of read between the lines. And this at this point would be a surprise. It's not like he went through some vigorous workout before the game the other night.
No,
either,
he
right?
was out.
I mean, I didn't see him on the field. That was sort of something of a sign. And then the way Harbaugh spoke about this yesterday, and then just the sense you get is that this does not look likely. And again, if you're looking for styles make fights and the matchup and whatever, going on the road up there in Buffalo, first road playoff game for a lot of those offensive linemen, I don't know that this was going to be a big chuck it around day to begin with. And we'll see if the weather, wind, and snow intervene to make it even less of that. And yes, I think Zay obviously is always super valuable when things break down and understanding Lamar and where he's going to go and the scramble drills. But they rolled up 30 without really throwing the ball to him 3 months ago on these guys.
By the way, just talking to people on Saturday, if they were to win Sunday, they're much more optimistic about the possibility of him playing in the AFC Championship game, for what that's worth.
Now, that would be, that's obviously, I mean, this is all hands on deck, too.
But, yeah.
I mean, you're talking now it's going on 3 weeks removed, and you also know if you win that game, you've got two weeks off. Like, that's obviously a little different ball of wax.
Let's hear more from John Harbaugh, who spoke to the media yesterday, and obviously not a great day for Steven Sims. What about the punt returner situation?
Well, I'm not sure yet. He'd been gone for quite a while, and he had the physical situation, had some personal things he was dealing with. But he's working hard in practice last week, and you just got to make sure a guy's ready, he's in shape and mentally ready. I mean, in his mind, he's ready. I can tell you that. He wants to play, and we'll just have to see. But Steven is a guy that we also have confidence in. And, I know he had a couple balls gone on the ground last week. This windy lefty, he was bombing the ball for sure. And, on the very first one, I don't know if he lost track of where he was at, but we don't want to be backing up inside the 8-yard line and catching those kind of punts. Just let that – give it a chance to go in the end zone, right? And so he'd like to have that one back. And then he decided to not field two of the other ones and turned out okay for us the way they bounced. So, but he's done well. He's an experienced guy, and he'll do well back there too. So we're confident. Or if Tylan was back there, we'd be confident with Tylan too. Those guys all do a good job.
So that was similar to Chris Horton last week. Their abundance of riches.
Not so much.
Just for the record, the he was referring to in the first part was Deontay Hardy, who was designated to return last week.
I think we're going to see him in this football game. I think enough's enough. You went and got that guy for a reason. I know it's been basically a lost year, but your season starts now. And you identified him, your personnel department, and your coaches, as somebody who could help your special teams return units in the offseason. And they've been... blech, outside of the odd Tylan Wallace, house call. So, yeah.
I would be shocked if Sims is the punt returner on Sunday. And going to Tylan Wallace, I don't know how much sense that makes because he was already benched after the Eagles game.
He helped cost you the Eagles game. That was a mess.
It's time to find out if Hardy can catch the ball.
Yeah.
Whether it's boomed from a lefty or whether there's a slight crosswind coming in at 32 degrees from the northwest.
Let me give you a hint, Jason. They're playing in Buffalo. There's that lake effect. It's going to be windy, most likely.
Yeah.
Ben just reminded me he did play in Buffalo, so he should be used to that Hardy, that is. So, Deontay Hardy revenge game.
There you go.
We've got it. Hey, more from Harbs. Talks about the growth of the offensive line over the course of the season.
Well, I think the offensive line, just like every position, but it's kind of there's a lot of individual stories in there. The 5 individual starters, and then there's others too that in the depth part of it. And if you get into that room, you kind of see that each guy's got his own story. But probably as a whole, it's probably just steady improvement. They've been through a lot. You look back at the Joe D situation. And then, the fact that it was 3 new guys and all that kind of stuff and, some of the doubts and all that kind of stuff that they dealt with. I really feel good and proud of them. But really, we don't think about it too much right now, Brian. It's just more about preparing for this game and the challenge that this defense presents our O-line, just like every position.
The O-line, let's go back to training camp. Jody passes away.
Yeah.
You've let Zeitler go. You traded Morgan Moses. Linderbaum's hurt. Ronnie Stanley, you don't know if he's going to be there when the season, by November. What this offensive line has done is pretty incredible.
Eric DaCosta came out in a press conference and said they're going to take their lumps early.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, but that is what his messaging was. Talking about the offensive line, it was the biggest concern heading into this season, and it was realized in those first 2 games when Chris Jones and Max Crosby eviscerated that group.
It's late September, early October, and I can remember banging the table for Patrick McCary saying there's no way you built a team with 5 better than him, and I know you don't want to have to ride him long and hard, but you better come up with the correct 5-man unit and give them time to gel. And then once they put them together, it started happening, and then they were lucky enough, knock wood, that injuries didn't intervene, and they ended up having a year of, they had more continuity between 1 5-man unit, the offensive line position, than I could think of in a long time. And so that ends up boding well for them. But yeah, we were concerned for good reason about this group the first month of the season.
And remember, Roger Rosengarten, I think his first snap, he had a miscommunication and they called him strip sack. Yeah, like Chris Jones. I went down a rabbit hole yesterday evening. Somebody was posting just they isolated on Rosengarten from the game this weekend. And I give Rosengarten full credit. Something's got to be wrong with T.J. Watt.
He's playing with one arm. Yeah, but he does not look like the same guy.
But Roger Rosengarten stood him up over and over and over again. And
yes,
that's twice in 3 weeks.
Yeah, no, and those are huge developmental moments for him that he carries that stuff with him in the next season. He absolutely looks the part. Now, does he stay at right tackle?
Yeah.
What happens with the left tackle? Yeah. Does Rosengarten go to left tackle and you're drafted another tackle? I don't think there's a whole lot of answers out there in free agency. So that'll be, that's one part of the puzzle we'll have to figure out this spring.
We talked a little bit yesterday about Lamar Jackson and the fact he got kneed in the back. And Lamar talked after the game about using a heating pad during the game. Harbs was asked about Lamar's health.
Lamar, in the second quarter, Lamar got kneed in the back pretty hard. Do you anticipate him that limiting his participation at all throughout the week as far as practice time?
Doesn't look that way from what I've been told.
Short and sweet, but it looks like Lamar will be on the field tomorrow.
I would imagine it's all systems go. Look, if they've got Derrick Henry going and you're sprinkling in Justice Hill, I don't know that the approach is going to be like it was with Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh was very particular in that. I even talked to Monken about it 2 weeks before when I was asking him about Lamar and the 8-man boxes and when he's keeping it and when he's not. And he made a very particular point, Monk did, about, hey, Houston and the Steelers, they've been approaching this a certain way. And so that led to a little bit more Derrick Henry. And you kind of didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out Pittsburgh's not going to do the same thing. Like, they're not. So the guy who might prosper early is Lamar because they're going to sell out to take away Derrick Henry. Turns out in the end, they couldn't stop either of them. But obviously, you had Lamar run 5 times in one series, right? I mean, you had Lamar. Did he run 11 times in the first half?
Yeah, 11 in the first half.
So, do I think that's going to be in the cards in Buffalo? Probably not.
I don't think it is, but in these do-or-die games, if he's needing to run, he's going to run.
It's nice to have it if you need it.
Let's hear one more real quick, because we talked a lot about Brandon Stevens yesterday. We talked a lot about Brandon Stevens last week. Harbs was asked about teams targeting Brandon Stevens.
Yeah, I mean, some people, they decide to do what they do, for whatever reason they do. And it's definitely been challenging. I mean, he's getting a lot of targets. And, you get a lot of targets, you're going to have more completions, for sure. That's just the way it goes. But you also make more plays. He's made a real good number of plays as well. And also, there's an opportunity there too for us a little bit, because if we get the sense that an offense is targeting, a particular part of the field or a particular player, in this sense, he plays right corner, so that's where they go. In nickel, now he's playing dime backer. It's a little different when we put dime out there on third down. But, okay, now we got an idea where you're going to kind of target. We can roll our coverage that way. We can put the strength of our coverage over there, too. So it's kind of a two-way street that way.
Sounds like Harbs wants to help.
It's a fancy way of saying a guy needs help, and we're going to give it to him.
Yes. Coming up next, Maryland had a game last night against Minnesota, coming off the big win Friday against UCLA. They won. It wasn't a work of art, but we'll recap next here on The Fan.
Gillespie comes up with it. Terps have got the numbers to Queen, and a slam with both hands.
Got to get back.
And it's a one-point lead now for Minnesota.
I think Derek, he wasn't happy with the way he played at UCLA, and I think he kind of came out with a little bit more focus and a little bit more energy on the offensive end, which I think the game comes so easy to him sometimes on the offensive end that it gets a little, I would say, lackadaisical. I thought he came out tonight with a very, very good positive energy that he was going to be aggressive. And, you get 27 and 7 against, a fifth-year guy, you're playing pretty good.
You're the highlight. Johnny Holiday is going to join the show in about an hour. We'll talk to him at 4 o'clock. He was on the call. You heard on 105.7 Fan and Maryland Sports Radio Network. And then you heard Kevin Willard after the game. Derek Queen leads the Terps with 27.7 boards, helping Maryland to a 77-71 win. This was a game that Minnesota led by three at the half.
Mm-hmm.
And Maryland looked janky. They couldn't hit open looks. It was a rough watch in the first half.
Yeah, the first half, look, I thought this was another game where if they play at their pace, they probably win comfortably. They couldn't really get going. Only 17 fast break points in the game. That's surprising to me. I mean, the Terps shot 40% from the floor in the first half. They're lucky that Minnesota turned the ball over a ton. They got 16 in the game, 10 of which in the first half. Otherwise, that deficit might have been more at halftime. I don't love the fact that Minnesota beat them on the offensive boards, 8-6. And it kind of looks like this, and it's still very early, and this isn't a problem. It's just an observation. I'm not saying it's a problem, but it's kind of like Likely and Andrews. If between Juju and Derek Queen, if one of them's going, the other one is probably fading from a points and rebound standpoint. And this became a big big Derek Queen game, just like the last couple have been big Juju games. And we didn't see a whole lot from Julian in this game. And Derek Queen took it over. It was great to see them lean into Rice in a game where he had a stroke and not everybody did. As again, staccato start, bad first half, missing a lot of shots they normally take. I just don't think they were very up for this game.
No, and
the building looked kind of empty.
Was dead. It was empty. How about Willard calling a timeout 90 seconds into the second half?
Yeah.
I mean, right after Seldon McGill hit that three, all right, guys, let's pick this up defensively.
Yeah, he was not happy in the postgame. I think we have that cut. Willard on calling the timeout. Where is that? I thought I saw that.
Because you look at Minnesota.
Yeah, 46, Ben, 46.
They started 5 of 6 from three.
Yeah.
Well, here's Willard on calling that timeout.
We missed a layup, and then we gave up a three, and then we hit a three. And I had some thoughts on my mind that sometimes it's better to do in a close, tight group instead of letting them run down the half and yelling them all the way down the half. So I just thought I just needed to get some things off my mind.
And the building was so empty, you probably could have heard him screaming it if he did. But he's like, I want to tell him in private instead of in public.
And what was funny, the very next possession, it was really tight. Gillespie was challenging, and they still ended up draining another three after that timeout.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the perimeter defense has been an issue here now for a couple of weeks. And they're lucky that Minnesota's not a great shooting team in the same way that UCLA was not, but they still, I mean, they only took 17. They made 8. So, I mean, almost 50%. They're lucky, though, that this isn't a team that shoots 30 or 40, which is not uncommon in this day and age. Yeah. Certainly 25 or more. It may have been a little bit of a different story. It was a trap game.
I do want to shout out when the game was tied at 46 and Gapari had that block, and then in transition, he ended up getting the assist with Gillespie in the corner for the three, and then Maryland kind of rolled from then, at least kept the lead at that point, because they trailed pretty much the entire way prior to that.
Dawson Garcia is a nice player, the senior forward. He's a nice player at 21, but once he picked up his fourth foul, that's when Queen sort of took over the game. And it was, you know, good on Queen to know that. Like, he knew that guy can't touch me, so I'm just going to take over.
Yeah, call for the ball, get your lob, and take it to the hole. A workmanlike performance. They let it get a little closer at the end than it probably needed to be.
Yeah, if you're better, they got it to 11, you think they might cover.
Yeah, well, I love the over, and it went over just fine. From I had it 135 and it ended up closing around 139. I just don't think they're going to play a lot of games at home under 140. I mean, this was not a good offensive performance for them at all. And I get it. Minnesota's not a great team, but they scored 77 and I would say it was like a C minus offensive game. Beltway Ben, any takeaways for you?
Liked what I saw from Queen. The three-point defense is horrible. I mean, Minnesota's not going to shoot. They shot 41% from three. They're not going to do that in the season. But again, like these guys, Coming into the game, it looked like they were looking to the Northwestern road game, mm-hmm. which kind of expected. I still thought the Terps would cover. Didn't take it, but I thought they'd cover. They didn't. But like defensively, it feels like sometimes they fall in love with the steals and jumping stuff. And when it's not there, you give guys wide open looks, and it happens time and time again. But I do like what Gapari is giving them just from a shot blocking mm-hmm. standpoint. He comes out of nowhere.
Yes.
Swats stuff off the backboard all the time. And we saw it in the UCLA game when we were there. And last night he had a few more. So hopefully, and I'm looking ahead, but next year, hopefully he can take a little bit more of a step offensively, because I think he can be a very, very premier player for him.
It kind of looked to me like he got a run while Geronimo was out, and then he started to fade a little bit, and they're like, well, let's see what Geronimo is, you know, what he can give us in this mix, because it's such a different tapestry than last year. And then they kind of saw how limited he was offensively, and now it's back to Gapar. I mean, and this was a game where it was comfortable. Geronimo played 1 minute.
Yeah. He got a steal, and then he went right back to the bench.
But that's a good issue to have for this team, where last year we would have been dying to have this.
Oh, no, it's not a complaint. It's just I think they're seeing now.
Yeah.
Not that Kapari was in the doghouse, but I think they're like, hey, this guy's got more seniority. We're starting to play some conference games. Let's get a look-see. Oh, no, this other one brings even more energy. He brings more electricity. He has some range. We've seen him drain threes when he's hot.
Yeah.
He's got quick hands. He's active. And I think they're going to want to play at a faster pace than most of these teams. And not that Geronimo can't move, but this kid's like the Energizer Bunny.
He's a freak. Maryland's next game is Thursday at Northwestern. It's a 9 o'clock tip, which means pregame coverage begins at 8 here on 105.7 The Fan. And coming up next, we get back to the Ravens. Lamar Jackson ran the ball 15 times in the win over the Steelers. Can Lamar run that much again this Sunday? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.